This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSIN, the Sports Betting Network.
Okay, Sharp Money and Amal Shaw has had a ton of success, of course, circa Survivor. So I know people were bitter as we open up Like, Love, Loathe, Amal Shaw, Dustin Sweetelson, I'm Patrick Maher. And I know people were bitter that the Giants come back from 21 down, boys, and end up beating the Cardinals 31-28. Don't cover the 4.5, which is where they closed on the road. However, the number was like, what, 1,300 could have been bounced from Survivor if the Giants had lost at Arizona, Amal?
Yep.
That would have cut the pool basically in half. Would have probably brought us down to, oh, around, I think, 4,500 or something like that.
That was, and we were on, now, Amal's got his own thing going, but we were on the Bills, correct, Dustin Sweetelson?
Yeah, we took the Bills, which were the most used team on Circa Survivor. But here's the thing, is while the Giants were losing, you also had the Broncos. That meant in the late window alone, the Broncos ended up losing. That could have been 2,000 combined right there between those two teams. Instead, you only get the 847 losing from Denver.
By the way, when we're going to get into the Like, Love, and Loathe, this is kind of part of my segment here. I also had Buffalo as well. I mean, they're down 7-0. They outscore the Raiders 38-3 the rest of the way. This Raiders team, man, if they play, their defense would fit right in the Big 12.
How about this? Maybe they're out of it. Jimmy G reunites with Robert Saleh in New York.
I'd tell you right now, I would send a private plane for Jimmy G right now. Jimmy G looks like Joe Montana right now to me.
And Chandler Jones seems happy with ownership there with the Raiders. Anywho, let's continue. Dustin, your face says it all, dog. Like, what the hell was that Twitter rant? Now, let's go Like, Love, Loathe. Yeah. We'll go all three, and I'll start with the like. You've seen the stat dancing around. Daniel Jones, forget being down 21 at the half. Forget the erratic play calling. Daniel Jones was the Giants yesterday.
Yeah.
He was the first player in Giants history. 250 passing yards, 50 rush yards, 2 passing touchdowns, 1 touchdown on the ground. And by the way, he did it all in the second half. One player since 2010, Mike Vick, went 250 through the air, 50 plus on the ground with 2 touchdowns and then 1 rush. The only other person to do it, Daniel Jones. I thought... And again, forget about the market and forget about the contract because he's always going to be compared to the number he got as far as getting paid. I thought Daniel Jones, honestly, I didn't like. I'll save my love for somebody else. I liked what I saw from Daniel Jones, specifically when they needed it most in the second half here, Amal.
I would agree with you completely. And I'll tell you what, he was very impressive. I watched that second half of the Cardinals-Giants game very closely. It was funny. I was sitting there thinking of Dustin when I was watching the game going, yo, man, we might be wrong on this guy. Like, he looked great on some of the throws, Patrick. It wasn't just the mobility, but it was just the accuracy on the throws. I don't know if it was the tying touchdown at 28 or the one that made it 21. Man, he threw an absolute seed in there. I was like, wow. There weren't 5 or 6 quarterbacks outside of him making that play that you would have taken to complete that pass.
Big guy?
Through 6 quarters, it looked like nobody was ever open for the Giants. Against the Cowboys, it felt like Daniel Jones was forced to run a lot because the pocket was really bad. The offensive line was bad. They were without Andrew Thomas, their only good lineman yesterday. And it just felt like guys weren't getting open. All of a sudden, something happened after they went to the locker room at the half, and guys were suddenly open. They brought in the rookie Jalin Hyatt to stretch the field. He made 2 huge catches to start his career. And I think he's a difference maker because they have a lot of good possession guys, but they need that vertical threat. And I got to tell you, as a Daniel Jones defender for a while, saying a lot of things weren't his fault, he made some throws downfield that even I didn't know he was capable of doing. Super accurate, a lot of time in the air, taking some risks, but calculated risks, and he threw a way better deep ball than I imagined. If they can add this vertical element aside from this kind of running side and short passing game, the Giants are a lot more dangerous than I thought going into the locker room yesterday.
He wasn't helped by the coaching. He wasn't helped by the play calling. Even that little pass out in the flat to Saquon, he put it for only Saquon could catch the ball. And obviously we'll find out more today if you guys have heard on Saquon. Go ahead, Dustin.
No, I haven't heard, but what was that in the first half? The only thing I can think of to justify it is they have a short week with San Francisco coming up. And they thought they could run over Arizona with a limited game plan. Halfway through, they realized we got to open it up more. That's the only thing I can think of because it was 2 totally different teams.
Well, that being down 28-7.
Yeah.
Yeah, I listen, I thought Jones was awesome. Honestly, all kidding aside, because he gets clowned nonstop, he was making big-time throws. And again, not necessarily a season-saving half, but we shall see. My like, Daniel Jones. Amal Shaw, you're up.
Just to finish up the point you made, Patrick, no, I would take it one step further. In my opinion, a season-saving 30 minutes of football. Because remember, they didn't score in the first six quarters. You've got the 49ers up in Santa Clara in, 96 hours from the time that game ended? I mean, that's a quick turnaround to have to play such a physical team who's been dominant so far.
Yeah, well put. Yeah. Who's your like?
I'm going to go with Michael Penix, Dylan Gabriel, and Kyle McCord, three starting quarterbacks for Washington, Oklahoma, and Ohio State. A lot of question marks for me with Penix. I know you guys were higher on him than I was coming into the season. Real quickly, Penix is completing 74% of his passes, 1,332 yards, 12 touchdowns, one INT, and it's just the consistency throughout. He's been outstanding. I thought a lot of it was a combination of Washington's receivers, who they played, and Kalen DeBoer, but I also think you have to put Michael Penix into that equation as being a key cog in the success of what we've seen out of Washington, and I think that team is very much alive for the Pac-12. Very quickly, Dylan Gabriel, a ridiculous 83% completion percentage so far this year, 11 touchdowns, one INT, 905 yards, and then Kyle McCord for the Buckeyes so far, 53-76 for 70%, six touchdowns, one INT. I just thought all three guys have been a little bit better than I would have anticipated this year.
I would have loved to be on the call this morning when Dustin Sweetelson, I need one like from you, Amal, and he gave him three quarterbacks in college football. I would have loved to hear the conversation. Now, I'll say this just to double down on what Amal just said about Penix. You can have your Ohio States. You can throw in another team. Is there a better wide receiving core than what we've got at Washington?
Because they have a third emerging now.
Well, McMillan, Polk, and Adunzie, to me, as a trio, are probably as good as anybody in college football. I will push back with Wilson and Coleman at Florida State. Those are absolute dudes.
Good one. Good one. Okay. Nice one. Quarterbacks as far as college football, like, you're up, big guy.
Some history was made Sunday when the Falcons were able to beat the Packers at home. And it comes down to one person, and it's not the quarterback. Officially, I can say, according to the Elias Sports Bureau, Desmond Ridder is the worst quarterback in NFL history to begin a season 2-0. And why is that? Because Arthur Smith is an offensive genius. What he is designing with this team, with the most limited quarterback in the league, is remarkable. If they ever get anyone with some talent under center there, this is going to be a dangerous offense to watch week in and week out. Because the fact that they were able to pull off this win, start the year 2-0 with Desmond Ridder dunking his way, 19 of 32 for 237, it's remarkable. He is one of the best offensive minds, not from that Shanahan McVay tree.
Here's the thing about Dustin Sweetelson, Amal Shaw. Just have a private conversation with the guy one time. He's like the cockiest guy on the planet. I freaking love it. I get off the conversation with him. I have an extra pep in my step because I'm like, if this guy's cocky, anyway, he also loves to double down on his arguments. So he's decided that he despises Desmond Ridder. And every show along the way here during the football season on Sharp Money, as you know them all, will include Dustin Sweetelson reminding us, kind of like Blake Snell, reminding us that he loathes Desmond Ridder. Fair?
There's no question about it, but here's the problem, Patrick. He does not loathe Desmond Ridder even 50% about as much as I do. I think this guy's the worst quarterback to play in the NFL.
He is bad. I'll agree with the two of you. Oh my God. Second half, I actually thought he was pretty good, though. To be fair, I thought he was fine.
The thing is, they're scheming things up to use his legs, which I think is great, but these defenses are going to have to learn. Just take away his legs because he can't throw to beat you. That's the simple cure here. You think Desmond Ridder is going to come back against your team? Just drop back, spy him, make sure he doesn't run it past the line of scrimmage. They're running the freaking option multiple times a game. He can't throw to beat you. Just sit back in coverage.
I absolutely love him. Real quick on Arthur Smith, it shouldn't come as a surprise that he's this intelligent. For people that are unaware, his father's Fred Smith, and you go, who is that? He's the man that started Federal Express. I mean, this is a sustained business that's been incredibly successful for a long, long time. Smith just calls the game in an intelligent way, plays to the strengths of what his players and the people and the personnel he has around him.
I'm not a big conspiracy theory guy, but have either of you seen Arthur Smith, the head coach of the Falcons, in the same room as our 21st president, Chester Arthur? Because Chester.
Now that you mentioned it, I've never seen them in the same room, Patrick.
Well, but the reason I bring it up, you know what Chester Arthur, big guy, you know what he invented?
What?
Mutton chops.
Oh.
The big bushy sideburns. Take a look at Arthur Smith. Big ass mutton chops. And again, I'm not saying his favorite president was the 21st, that being Chester Arthur, but Arthur Smith kind of got same vibes. They're 2-0. Bijan, it's almost like they could use him more effectively, or he's about as electric. We saw Drake London get involved yesterday, Amal Shaw, which is important to them. Nice little start here for the Falcons.
No question about it. You mentioned Bijan goes 19 for 124. Drake London, 6 for 67 on a house call. Mack Hollins, that length on the perimeter, 3 for 60 as well. You know, the one thing I'd like to see is a little bit more consistency on getting the ball to these guys on the perimeter, whether it's London, whether it's Mack Hollins, Kyle Pitts. But again, it's not going to happen with my man Desmond Ridder. What are you guys laughing at?
Big guy. You know, I'm just laughing because, yes, I'm aware Chester Arthur died in 1886. So it would be tough for the two of them to be in the same room. I'm just saying, look out for the mutton chops. Go ahead, big
You
guy.
Mentioned mutton. What's this from? Hey, salad's got nothing on this mutton.
Seinfeld. Come on, man.
Get the hell out of here. All right, three quarterbacks from college football. I had Daniel Jones because I stole it from the big guy. And what was your like, Dustin?
Arthur Smith,
the coach of the Atlanta Falcons. When we come back, let's go love here on Sharp Money.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSIN, the sports betting network.
Okay, can we open up the big guy's mic here? Because Dustin, bet smarter with Juice Reel. You can connect all your betting accounts and history. So this is, and maybe you can help me out with this because I'm brand new to it. You can see stats and betting behavior, analyze data to help you bet smarter. You can download Juice Reel in the App Store today or go to juicereel.com. Remember back in the day, you and I used to talk about we needed one place where everything was kind of centralized. And it looks like, Dustin, Juice Reel is the place.
Well, yeah. What happens is you'll load your betting history into the app, and it's going to analyze it for you, show you kind of where you're doing good, where you're doing bad, and use the analytics to pick your next bets.
Okay. Check it out, juicereel.com. Now, I started the show as we welcome you back. I'm Patrick Maher, live from Los Angeles. Again, I mentioned if I started thanking Dustin and Amal, it would take 2 hours. If I then went to John Goulet and Len Mead and Bill A.D. and Stacey McCollum for the last 2 weeks, it would take even more time. So thank you to everybody for all your help. I really do appreciate it. And I will say we heard from one of our fearless leaders today. VSiN is killing it. And not only that, Dustin and I have YouTube TV. Amal, I don't know if you've signed up for it, but it's so efficient. The user, the interface to kind of navigate YouTube TV, the quad boxes they have for football on Saturday, incredible. But you can now check out VSiN on Roku, which is obviously super popular. My father's all over Roku. Samsung TV Plus. And if you want to find all the information, it's DraftKingsNetwork.com. But the algorithm, Dustin, for YouTube TV, when you check it out, like you go to mine, it says ESPN, VSiN, you know, all, like it just literally starts to program everything you want and watch.
I'm generally a person when I make major life decisions, I definitely have some regrets initially where I go, you know what, I might have botched this, give it a few months and see how it goes. I am not looking to go back to cable. What YouTube TV is offering right now is insane, especially on Saturdays and Sundays when I've got the 4 and 5 TVs going with four or five games at a time. It's crazy what I'm able to do on YouTube TV. It's so much easier to watch. This is not a paid endorsement. I have to pay my bill. I pay extra for the sports package, and it's worth it.
I just have a quick question. If you're not a sports person, why would anybody have cable television?
Exactly. But I'm getting all of those sports channels on here. I'm getting my local channels. In fact, I'm getting baseball. I got the Giants game I was watching the other day. I normally would have to try to watch the San Francisco Giants through my MLB app, but it'll be blacked out here in Vegas. I'm able to watch it on YouTube TV.
So we started the show like, love, loathe. I'm going to go love and Sean McVay just to give it away, kind of sell the lead. But I started the show by saying we often wonder, do head coaches and do coaches in general pay attention to the number? Well, Sean McVay with that field goal late to obviously cover the 7.5 if you had it push on the 7, a 30-23 win for San Francisco. Sean McVay answered that question definitively. Yes, they pay attention to the number, but my love is Sean McVay, fellas, in particular. 2-0 ATS on the year. He's plus 11 ATS-wise on the year. Again, if you just take a step back and look kind of macro at what McVay has done, he's 37. He's been to a Super Bowl and lost. He's been to a Super Bowl and won, the youngest to win a Super Bowl. In six full seasons, he's got 11 wins, 13 wins, 9 wins, 10 wins, 12 wins. His coaching tree, McVay, is already more, I guess you would say, more prevalent and more successful than Bill Belichick. He is, we talked about Poku Noku. I think he had to transfer from Washington to BYU and popping already in the pros with just crazy amounts of catches through 2 weeks as far as a rookie record. Matthew Stafford, Amal Shaw, has looked like he's 28. My love randomly this week is for Sean McVay. I thought this roster, if you just looked at it from a construct, was terrible. And 2 weeks in, he's gone on the road and won at Seattle, hung in there against a very good roster in San Francisco. My love this week, Sean McVay.
Got no qualms with that. I think McVay is a terrific coach. I think he's got the right disposition for today's players. He's done a tremendous job. And let's be real here. I don't think too many people had the Rams going on the road, winning at Seattle, and covering the number against the 49ers. But remember, this game was tight. They had some opportunities in this game, couldn't capitalize on it. Give San Francisco credit. But at the end of the day, McVay's got a far more competitive team than we would have expected coming into the season.
Do you guys have a take on the field goal late?
Yes.
That guy will go to you.
I think I've seen a lot of people outraged about it, and I got to tell you, as a bettor, I think it gives us information that we can use to bet going forward. You know, when you back a Sean McVay team now going forward, that if there's a chance to cover, he's going to do it. And I feel better about doing that, especially in close games, divisional games, whatever it may be, that Sean McVay is the kind of guy that is always going to keep going for it. Now, it was a little weird at the end with the way he handled the final couple minutes, but in the end, he looked to get a cover, and that should matter if you want to bet on players, coaches, and teams.
Well, I'm going to tell you, I think it was actually the right decision, not from a gambling standpoint, just an overall standpoint, because remember, tiebreakers are a factor in determining playoffs if you have several other things in front of you that are tied. Strength of schedule, head-to-head record against common opponents. I know people are not worried about 3 points in the grand scheme of things, but let's just say it came down to it. Why not make that play as opposed to just trying to throw the ball in the end zone, which is probably not going to be completed?
Did you just sneak in and I'm the type of guy right underneath Amal Shaw without him noticing?
100%.
Okay. To be fair. Okay. That's my love, McVay. I mean, and think about his coaching tree so far.
Yeah.
Like, Belichick hasn't been able to produce a head coach, and McVay just keeps on spitting them out. What he's done in just 6 short years has been incredible. Amal Shaw, you're up. Your love for the week.
Just the NFL in general. You know, all of us were on the Bills in that Survivor contest. They win the game easily. I mentioned earlier outscoring the Raiders 38-3 at one point in time in this game, I believe. But to me, or at least the rest of the way, 38-10, whatever it was. But, you know, to me, when I look at it, think about these games. The Bears game, you get the pick six late. The Packers-Falcons game, final field goal there to win the game. Even if the Texans, if they hit the Fairbairn long field goal, it's a one possession game. Seattle-Detroit goes to overtime. Lions coming back. Chargers-Titans goes to overtime. Ravens-Bengals 3-point game. Chiefs-Jaguars came down to a failure to execute, down 17-9 in the red zone on 4th-and-10. Rams game was tight throughout. Giants with an incredible comeback, down 28-7. Commanders game, we get a Hail Mary and a 2-point conversion attempt. How good is the National Football League? I mean, it's unbelievable. In terms of just, you don't have to be a bettor. You don't have to play fantasy football. I've never even played fantasy football. But to me, Patrick, when you're just watching, if you like competitive sports, I don't care what the sport is. If there's 2 minutes to go in a game, and if it's tight and close, I'm going to watch the conclusion of it. And that's exactly what the NFL is every week.
It's funny, and we've got two more games tonight. It's funny you said that for your love, because I wrote down at the top of my list today, a lot to unpack. The NFL consistently delivers. It's unbelievable. If you're sitting there for 10 straight hours yesterday, you're right. The product completely delivered them all. Big guy, you're up. Your love.
My love is a specific conference in college football. And, you know, there's one that we all follow closely that's down. There's one that routinely bores me. And there's another one that I don't ever find as interesting as other people. But the one conference right now that every single one of their teams to me is a fun watch is the Pac-12. The Pac-12, the quarterback play, the offenses, the diverse attacks. I am loving everything I see from the Pac-12 this season. I just, look, you've got Caleb Williams and USC at the top. You know what they're about. It's ultimately make the playoffs or it's a bust this year. You've got Colorado doing what they're doing. Must watch TV, must experience moments in Boulder. Oregon's flying under the radar, but they already have a marquee win under their belt, and they look really good. And they've got a huge one with Colorado this week. Oregon State and DJ look awesome. They beat up on San Diego State. Didn't have to show too much in doing so. Utah super physical. Washington's wide open. I love the Pac-12 right now. It is the most fun conference in college football to watch. It is the one that you should be scheduling your weekend around.
I just want to add one thing to it. I don't think this is a recent development. For me, look, the Big 12 has always been very entertaining for a long time, especially when we saw those high-scoring offenses. You know, you go back several years and then maybe to about a dozen years. But if I'm looking at it from an unbiased perspective, Patrick, you and I are Big Ten homers from that part of the country. If you look at the Pac-12 for a long, long time, it's always never had a consistent team outside of SC. That's why I thought the league has been so good, because you could have a Washington, you could have an Oregon, a Washington State can win the league, Arizona State back in the 90s. There's so many different teams, Stanford with David Shaw. And when you look at it geographically, guys, I don't know if there's a conference that has a more of a juxtaposition. You've got the entertainment capital of the world in Los Angeles, USC and UCLA. You've got a podunk town where you literally, if you go to Pullman and people say there's a hill, turn right. No, don't give me the street. Can I have the street? No, you can't miss the hill. Like, it's unbelievable the difference in terms of the leagues of the schools.
And they're good, too, by the way. Wazoo is really good. Cam Ward is serious. They have this new offensive coordinator from Western Kentucky. They have a defensive head coach who's great at that. I love Washington State right now.
And the best thing about the Pac-12, if you think about it, boys, the way they're set up, they're good for years and years to come. Hey. When we return, let's like, love, let's get to our loathes. And Shane Beamer in Columbia, South Carolina, I'm coming for your ass.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSIN, the sports betting network.
Okay, good job, Amal Shaw. I'll come to you in a second. Breaking news out of East Lansing, college football related. But first, put VSiN experts to work for you this football season and start betting smarter with a VSiN Pro subscription. You can sign up now and save 10% off the VSiN Pro annual subscription when you use the promo code SHARP, S-H-A-R-P. You can get full access to everything we do, including our daily best bets with a leaderboard to see which VSiN expert has the hot hand, betting splits to show you where the money and bets are moving for every game, plus betting systems, premium analysis, and 24/7 video access. Remember, you have to use the promo code SHARP and you get 10% off. Sign up today, vsin.com/subscribe. Steve Fezzik coming up in a half hour. Of course, we've got the big guy, Dustin Sweetelson. I'm Patrick Maher. Amal Shaw rounds it out. This is Sharp Money here on VSIN, the Sports Betting Network. And we go to Amal Shaw with some breaking news out of East Lansing.
Yeah, officially Michigan State has told Mel Tucker intends to fire him with cause, as the university announced on Monday. He signed a 10-year, $95 million contract extension less than 2 years ago. And Patrick, being fired for cause would cost Mel Tucker more than $80 million. So if you think you're having a bad Monday, probably not as bad as Mel Tucker's.
I would have given Chris Tucker $100 million to coach in East Lansing before I gave Mel Tucker, coming off one mediocre year at Colorado, big guy. But it looks like at this point the university has amassed a body of undisputed evidence of misconduct that warrants termination for cause. A letter to Tucker has stated, and Amal brought it up, and it's a very valid point and distinction here when talking about Mel Tucker. Amal, this was a guaranteed contract.
Yeah.
Like, in life, those words string together don't happen very often. Guaranteed money over 10 years. And my dude hopped on the telly and just unloaded $80 million. I'm not going to get into the specifics as to, of course, you can Google and find out and come to your own conclusions as far as why Amal, excuse me, Mel Tucker is getting, I don't want to conflate, is getting fired in East Lansing. But can we all just agree, one of the biggest boneheaded moves by a human being on the planet, losing out on $80 million?
Look, whether you like it or not, whether the situation, you can get into the specifics of it, but we talked about this during the commercial break. When you reach a certain level and a certain financial level, there might be certain things you're unable to do, and you may not like it, but that's just the cost of getting $95 million. And by the way, part of it is Matt Ishbia, the owner of the Phoenix Suns. I'll tell you right now, guys, I don't know how close you pay attention. Patrick, I know you pay attention. Dustin, I don't know how much you pay attention. The real estate and the mortgage business have been absolutely eating it at 8% on a 30-year fixed rate. And Matt Ishbia is not doing too much refinancing right now. He's like, Sparty, we got to hold off on the donations for a little while here, buddy.
I'm a 45-year-old man that hasn't even sniffed mortgages in my life. All I do is rent, big guy. I'm renting life. I might as well rent an apartment. However, Mel Tucker, and frankly, can we all agree, like, across the board here, Michigan State, from a football perspective, just dodged a bullet. They don't have to deal with 10 years of Mel Tucker. And as you mentioned, Amal, Kenneth Walker Jr., that was that 11-win season, the running back.
No question about it. And take the element of any sexual harassment, any misconduct away from this argument. I'm really ticked off Mel Tucker got fired. Now, we could have a potential coach who comes into the Big Ten East that could challenge Penn State, Ohio State, and Michigan. We knew Michigan State was looking at 7-5 with a great year with Mel Tucker as the head coach.
Big guy, you got anything?
Yeah, you'd be hard-pressed to find someone hornier than me.
But oh, geez.
Here's what I'll say. Compare it I want to put Mel Tucker into perspective. Not specifically what he did, but Hugh Freeze was fired for being horny on a cell phone as well in a different way. Hugh Freeze is an offensive genius and a mastermind that has won every step of the way, and he fell to the bottom and was able to get back to the top and is now the head coach at Auburn. We are not going to see from Mel Tucker again. There is nothing from Mel Tucker that wows anyone. When he bailed on Colorado, they were upset for a minute and then realized, you know what? We could probably still do better. Nobody is going, oh, man, Mel Tucker, we're going to miss out on his genius. No one's going to give him that other shot to work his way back up. Trust me, Michigan State is better in the long run.
If I'm Mel Tucker, I go to the athletic director and the president of Michigan State and say, guys, I'll take $25 million, wire to the Caymans. Let's just call it a day.
So apparently he has, just to get some facts out there, he has 7 days to respond to what they've put out there, Michigan State. And then if he doesn't, on September 26th, he will be fired. There's also a part where Tucker, I guess, according to Chris Vanini of The Athletic, has said his relationship with Brenda Tracy is not a school matter, it's a personal matter. But Michigan State says otherwise, because she was a vendor for the school. She was paid to come in and speak, and he did reprehensible things on the phone with her.
That exhale you just heard was John Goulet, because when a sentence starts like this on Sharp Money, we're entering dangerous territory. You'd be, quote, hard-pressed to find anybody hornier than me, end quote, Dustin Sweetelson. Okay, let's move on. Wow. Speaking of college football head coaches, I don't know if you saw this, Amal Shaw, but 14-3 at the half, South Carolina up on Georgia. Your boy, Shane Beamer, was running laps around Sanford Stadium, running laps between the hedges. Couldn't wait to get to the halftime interview to discuss that essentially South Carolina was running roughshod over Georgia. Told the interviewer there at the half, we just kicked their butts up and down. A 14-3 lead where, by the way, I'm pretty sure Georgia in the first half of that game, they won by 10.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure Georgia had like 3 or 4 possessions in the first half. So good on South Carolina. They swiftly came out in the second half after their head coach doth protest too much and got their asses waxed. My loathe this week is Shane Beamer. And trust me, I want to like the guy. He's a 46-year-old. He's very motivated. He's good on social media. He's my alma mater's head coach. But Shane Beamer flexing about being up 14-3 at the half in Georgia and Athens, not a great look.
I completely agree with you. There's no reason for it. You know, this is from the Jay Norvell school of keep your mouth shut. Why are you sitting there saying that? You're at Sanford Stadium. You're 30 minutes away from pulling the biggest upset off in the college football season and one of the biggest ones in South Carolina history. Just no reason for it there. I agree with you completely, Patrick.
You were watching the game. You didn't text me, but you knew that I was watching intently and very closely Dustin Swedelson, and I heard that Shane Beamer was flexing at the half about, quote-unquote, beating their butts, that being Georgia, a team that's chasing a three-peat. Not necessarily what you want to hear from your head coach.
Yeah, I know how you kind of operate when your antenna goes up. And your antenna goes up when people are acting like busters. And your boy Beamer was busting at the seams to be a buster on the sidelines. He couldn't help himself. He was so giddy at halftime. He was celebrating such a minor victory in terms of the battle that was at hand for him. It was really, honestly, weak. Because if you're South Carolina and you're Shane Beamer, you know what you want the message to be? If I want my general up there after we're beating down this opponent that's supposed to be greater than ours, yeah, we expected this. We know we can hang with them, and we're going to go finish the job. Instead, he celebrated before the game was even halfway over.
And by the way, Amal Shah, you and Dustin had just highlighted during his love segment the Pac-12,
yeah,
which I totally agree. It's fun, and it's freaking loaded this year. And we can have a discussion about the SEC being down. I'm going to say we're stretching a little bit talking about Georgia being down because of that first half performance. I thought in the second half, dude, they just have so many dudes. They have so much size. They still have so much speed outside. Yes, the quarterback's not exactly what you want from Beck, but they're by far and away the most talented team in the country in Georgia.
Well, I don't know if the, you know, depth wise, I'd probably say you're right on that. I
should clarify. Yeah. You're right, depth wise.
But you know what concerns me is, look, I get against Ball State fourth quarter didn't matter, but Patrick, they didn't score against the guys from Muncie in the first quarter. They struggled in the first half against South Carolina. I just don't think if people in Athens and the surrounding Atlanta area expect this team to be what they were the last 2 years, it's a big mistake. I think overall college football is down in terms of elite teams, but. And again, it comes back to quarterback play. We'll see what happens. You know, it's funny. We all criticize guys like Stetson Bennett and maybe an A.J. McCarron. But then when they're gone, you're like, damn, wish those guys were still at those programs if you're a fan or right. Supporter of those teams.
It's just quintessential college quarterbacks.
Yep.
I think that's well put. Big guy, you lived in Georgia. You know this team. You know you put a fence around the state of Georgia. You can win national championships. Kirby is doing just that. I think it's a little overstated that they're overrated this year. Your thoughts?
I think who they are now is not who they'll be at the end, and it all centers around Beck. And I think that's a lot of their goal here is they're going to slowly bring him along throughout the year because the schedule's so easy. They don't have to show too much. And every week they'll implement more and more, and hopefully they peak at a point towards the end of the season where they're playing up to the standards that we see Georgia as being over the last few years. But as of right now, I'm not overly impressed. I'm not overwhelmed by them maximizing, especially the talent they have on the offensive side of the football. But I think that's by design. I think it's by plan. I do have one fear, though, and I do think at some point they will miss Todd Monken because Mike Bobo is not an offensive innovator, and he's very predictable.
No, Bobo. No. Okay, Amal Shah broke the news. Michigan State has given Mel Tucker a notice of intention to fire him for cause, meaning no buyout. Bye-bye, 80 mil. When we return, Dustin and Amal's loathe. Sharp money.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shah on VSIN, the sports betting network.
Okay, football is back. It's in full swing with another week of epic games, including tonight. You can bet $5 and get $200 instantly in bonus bets, and it's a new customer offer over at DraftKings. Get in on the NFL action this week. Of course, Monday night, closing out week two. DraftKings Sportsbook, official partner of the NFL. New customers can bet just $5 and get $200 in instant bonus bets only on DraftKings Sportsbook with code SHARP. The crown is yours. We're back. Sharp Money. Dustin Swedelson, Amal Shah. I'm Patrick Maher. It's nice to be with you on a Monday. Mention, we close out week two tonight, fellas. I'll give you the number quickly, and then I want to get to your loves. We've gotten 15 minutes. Steve Fezzik joining us, professional handicapper with plenty of bets for Monday Night Football. You've got New Orleans laying 3 across the board and a total of right around 39.5 as far as the consensus at Carolina. And Cleveland laying 2 at Pittsburgh, 39, you're looking at a total. Okay, my loathe was Shane Beamer. Let's get to Amal Shaw. And by the way, just quickly, looks like East Lansing, Michigan State going to move on with cause from Mel Tucker. So they're not going to owe him the $80 million left on that fat deal. Dustin, Amal, you're up. Loathe.
The SEC. And really, it comes down to quarterback play for me here. This league continues to struggle without good quarterback play. The reason why the Pac-12 is so great, Caleb Williams, Bo Nix, Michael Penix, Cam Ward, Shedeur Sanders. It's just the list goes on and on. Didn't even mention DJ up at Oregon State. You look in the SEC, outside of Daniels, we talked about Carson Beck struggling with Georgia. We talked about Graham Mertz, who is inconsistent in the first game against Florida. This is not Joe Milton. Looks like Tarzan can't play, though. I mean, bottom line is you look at this team, they struggle going into the swamp. Vanderbilt loses to UNLV over the weekend. You reference South Carolina, even though Spencer Rattler's an absolute dude, no offensive line play. But to me, this league is down, and it's down a lot. And I think the biggest problem is A&M losing to Miami. This league is just not as good as it's been in years past, Patrick, and I think they could get exposed when we get to bowl season.
And Rattler, are we all going to agree Rattler is the best of the bunch in the SEC? What he's doing, Dustin, behind an absolute pathetic offensive front there at South Carolina, a coach that I just highlighted doesn't necessarily know what he's doing. And if you take a look, to Amal's point, without that 61-yarder in Missouri, could have been a disastrous weekend for the SEC.
Yeah, I think for Rattler, one thing I think we're all kind of taking notice of is, you know, South Carolina's got a good team. They don't have a great team, you know, talent-wise. And I think he's doing a lot with them. I think his pro prospect status is going up every week because he's doing more with them, and you're kind of seeing the skills that led to him being such a big recruit and originally going to Oklahoma. So for Spencer Rattler, I think he's doing a lot to help his draft stock right now. But to Amal's point about the SEC, I am not really thrilled with any of these teams right now. I think they're all susceptible, but one of them will make the playoff. One of them will somehow find its way to the championship. And one of them will upset a team that we're all building up to be better than them when they're still the SEC is the only issue that comes from this.
I just want to add
Can
one
I
thing.
Just follow
Sorry,
up?
Go ahead, please.
Sorry, and then I'll let you follow up. Amal, could you make your case about Milroe and what Alabama did, kind of cornering themselves this weekend with the quarterback position?
Well, I said to Dustin over the weekend, I said, look, if Tyler Buchner plays, Alabama's got no shot to cover this number. He is terrible. They bring in Tommy Rees, and I don't even know why they brought in Buchner. He can't play. He should not be at a level of Notre Dame or Alabama. And then they bring in Simpson, the big-time recruit. Doesn't look as good. Patrick, to me, Jalen Milroe's athleticism, it gets challenged when you play teams who have the skill set of a Texas or somebody who can negate one of your options, either running the ball or throwing the ball. Texas said, we're not going to let you run the football, whether it's you or the running backs. We're going to make you beat us throwing the ball. They couldn't do it. But against a team like South Florida, Jalen Milroe would have made these guys look like they're standing in mud. I'm telling you right now, Patrick, Alabama would have dominated. This would not have been the conversation. And very quickly, Nick Saban already made the decision after 48 hours of what he saw in Tampa. We're going back to Jalen Milroe.
Okay. Sorry, interrupted you. Follow up your point there on college football and the SEC.
No, I was just saying, look, when you look at this league, I think you guys are absolutely right on Spencer Rattler. But the one area where I think I'm wrong is I thought Georgia would have a cakewalk to get to the SEC title game. They still may. But I tell you what, if Jaden Daniels plays the way he did in the first half in Stark Vegas, nobody's beaten LSU. I know they got beat by Florida State fairly comfortably, guys, but it goes back to what you guys were talking about. Rattler's a good quarterback. We were talking about a little bit off air, and then we were talking about the Pac-12 quarterbacks, and that's the difference. I think Daniels could be the difference if Carson Beck doesn't eventually elevate his play, but the good thing for him is he's got to play well against Florida and against Kentucky. He survives those two games, then he can get ready for Atlanta.
Like, love, loathe, and we close it out with the big guy, and you're loathe. What's up?
It's pretty basic here, and it's time for a move to be made because Zach Wilson is not the guy. He is my loathe. I tried for about 10 minutes last week to convince myself that Zach Wilson had enough time and had been humbled enough and was holding the clipboard long enough that he was going to kind of turn a corner. And I know he hasn't had a ton of time to do it, but I'm just not seeing it. I didn't see it when he was picked where he was. I didn't see it during that 2020 shortened season where they played a limited schedule for BYU. I didn't see all the skills that all these quarterback gurus were pointing out in the All-22, because I don't watch the All-22. I can barely count to 22. So I think now for the New York Jets, they have enough evidence. They have a window here that is going to last a couple years with Aaron Rodgers. He's going to be back next year, but I don't think you can waste this season. So for me, my loathe is Zach Wilson, him being the quarterback one for the Jets right now. It's time to find someone else to come in and at the very least compete, if not take that job away from him.
Amal, Wilson was horrible his first outing, filling in for Rodgers. You mentioned Garrett Wilson kind of saved him against Buffalo week one.
Yeah.
I know it's a tough spot, emotional, short week, turnaround, you go to Dallas, but 12 of 27, 170, you had the touchdown. Wilson's ridiculous, but the three interceptions, again, they scored just 10 points in a blowout loss to the Cowboys. It's kind of a waste. We started the show at the top with the juxtaposition with the four teams, that being Baltimore 2-0, 0-2 with the Cincinnati Bengals, and then you move to Dallas, who through 2 weeks, potentially the best team in all of football, and a 1-1 Jets team that's trending in the wrong direction with a quarterback, and you mentioned it. You were kind of waiting to see, kind of a wait-and-see approach at quarterback, and now you're jumping off Wilson.
Look, I would say, guys, he's the second worst starting quarterback in the National Football League. I mean, it's just cut and dry for me. I think the Jets need to move on. They've got an elite Super Bowl-level defense. It's being wasted. They've got a Pro Bowl-level wide receiver. I love Breece Hall at the tailback position. They've got some talent on this team, Patrick. And as long as Zach Wilson is under center, there's a couple things that are happening. You can just see the body language of the team, the head coach. I thought it was really bad this week when Robert Saleh seemed just absolutely despondent when, you know, asked about Zach Wilson, the way he responded. You've got to be a lot... Look, even if you're not buying it, sometimes you got to fake it till you make it. And I thought that's what he should have done with Zach Wilson being the starting quarterback. You could tell there was no confidence in him.
And it's not a great look, to your point, Amal.
Yeah.
And also, Dustin, when Breece Hall, so I think he posted on social yesterday, you know, four football emojis, which represented the four carries he had in the game. And then Sauce Gardner, who we all agree is a freaking stud,
yeah,
last year's Defensive Rookie of the Year. Apparently, he started beefing with people over social and then, you know, shut down his Twitter account, which is probably best for everybody. But to further your point, as far as the way Saleh was reacting, it's almost like once Rodgers goes down, you could kind of feel the air being ripped from that football team.
Yeah, it was immediately to start the season. So I don't see why you would waste a whole year. You have plenty of time to make a move. I know trades generally, especially for quarterbacks, don't happen very often in the regular season in the NFL, but there's guys out there. You've got everything else in place. Go get someone to push.
Who?
Zach Wilson. Jacoby Brissett would be one. He's an upgrade. Anyone's an upgrade. That's the thing. Make the postseason. You're not going to win the Super Bowl. You're not going to get someone who wins the Super Bowl. But I do think that for this team and for the culture, making the postseason is really important for them. I think they need to learn what it takes to get there. Then you add Rodgers back into the mix next year, and they already have that instilled in them. They know what they need to do to get it done. Jacoby Brissett, Jameis Winston, Andy Dalton, even Tyrod Taylor is an upgrade. Tyrod Taylor is a guy who I like, but he stopped taking risks later in his career. Maybe with more weapons with New York, what they have offensively, he'll take more risks and he can be a guy for them. Anyone is an upgrade over Zach Wilson at this point.
Don't disagree. Who would you like to plug in? I hadn't heard, and I've been out of it for the last 2 weeks, but the Jameis piece is interesting. Is that something you guys have discussed?
Well, yeah, we did, and I kind of just pushed it aside. Now I'm like, hey, let's go send a personal car for Jameis to take him to the airport.
All right. Like, love, low, and it's a very good defense. Like, yeah, that's a great... Now, Dallas's defense is so fast on another level, and Parsons is ridiculous. But that Jets defense is really, really good. They were hanging around in that game, even on a short week. It's just it was a glaring hole at the quarterback position. When we return, professional handicapper Steve Fezzik joins us right here. Sharp Money. It's VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.